Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I will be reading to you today from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad, the Lattimore translation of Homer's Iliad, and I'm reading from Book 17. As a side note, all of Book 17 will focus on the battle for the body of Patroclus. Patroclus, who is Achilles' good friend, he went out to fight Hector wearing Achilles' armor, correct? The god Apollo knocked his helmet from him. The god Apollo broke the corslet straps so that his shield fell from him. And then a Trojan ran up behind him. And the Trojan was Euphorbus, ran up behind him, stabbed him in the back, pulled it out between the shoulders, and went running. He was afraid to face Patroclus. And then, of course, Hector comes and finishes him off. Book 17. As Patroclus went down before the Trojans in the hard fighting, he was not unseen by Atreus' son, warlike Menelaus, who stalked through the ranks of the champions, helmed in the bright bronze, and bestrode the body, as over, how did Menelaus protect this body, standing over it? As over a firstborn calf, the mother cow stands lowing, she who has known no children before this, as like a mother cow with only one child. So Menelaus of the fair hair stood over Patroclus, and held the spear in the perfect circle of his shield before him, raging to cut down any man who might come forth against him. Nor did the fall of blameless Patroclus pass unattended by Panthous's son of the strong ash spear, Euphorbus, who, standing close to face him, spoke a word to warlike Menelaus. "Son of Atreus, Menelaus, illustrious leader of armies, give away! Let the bloody spoils be. Get back from this body, since before me no other one of the Trojans or renowned companions struck Patroclus down with the spear in the strong encounter." Line 15. Remember who was it who ran up behind Patroclus, hit him between the shoulders, and pulled the spear out and ran? That was Euphorbus. Line 16. "Therefore let me win this great glory, this Megacleos, among the Trojans before I hit you and strip the sweetness away of life from you." So Euphorbus also wants the body. Deeply stirred, Menelaus of the fair hair answered him, "Father Zeus, it is not well for the proud man to glory. Neither the fury of the leopard is such, not such is the lion's, nor the fury of the devastating wild boar, within whose breast the spirit is biggest and vaunts in the pride of his strength, is so great as goes the pride in these sons of Panthous of the strong ash spear. Yet even the strength of Hyperenor, breaker of horses, had no joy of his youth when he stood against me and taunted me, and said that among all the Danaans I was the weakest in battle. Yet I think that his feet shall no more carry him back to pleasure his beloved wife and his honored parents. So I think I can break your strength as well, if you only stand against me. No, but I myself tell you to get back into the multitude, not stand to face me before you take some harm. Once a thing has been done, the fool sees it." So Menelaus is vaunting to this Euphorbus, saying, "You better get out of here while you can." He spoke so, but did not persuade Euphorbus, who answered, "Then, lordly Menelaus, you must now pay the penalty for my brother whom you killed, and boast that you did it," line 35, "and made his wife a widow in the depths of a young bride chamber, and left to his parents the curse of lamentation and sorrow. Yet I might stop the mourning of these unhappy people if I could carry back to them your head and your armor, and toss them into Panthous's hands and to Phrontis the lovely," line 40. "No, this struggle shall not go long untested between us, nor yet unfought, whether it prove our strength or our terror." He spoke, and stabbed Menelaus's shield in its perfect circle, nor did the bronze break its way through, but the spearhead bent back in the strong shield, and after him Atreus's son Menelaus made his prayer to Father Zeus and lunged with the bronze spear, and as he was drawing back, caught him in the pit of the gullet, and leaned in on the stroke in the confidence of a strong hand, and clean through the soft part of the neck the spear point was driven. He fell thunderously, and his armor clattered upon him, line 50. And his hair, lovely as the Graces, was splattered with blood, those braided locks caught wasp-wise in gold and silver. as some slip of an olive tree, strong-growing, that a man raises in a lonely place, and drenched it with generous water, so that it blossoms into beauty, and the blasts of winds from all quarters tremble it, and it bursts into pale blossoming. But then a wind, suddenly in a great tempest, descending upon it, wrenches it out of its sand, and lays it at the length of the ground. Such was Euphorbus of the strong ash spear, the son of Pantheus, whom Menelaus Atreides killed, and was stripping his armor. Line 60. As when in the confidence of his strength, some lion hill-reared snatches the finest cow in a herd as it pastures, first the lion breaks her neck, caught fast in the strong teeth, then gulps down the blood and all the guts that are inward savagely, as the dogs and the herdsmen raise a commotion loudly about him, but from a distance, and are not willing to go in and face him, since the hard green fear has hold of some of them, so no heart in the breast of any Trojan had courage to go in and face glorious Menelaus. Then easily the son of Atreus, line 70, might have taken the glorious armor from Pantheus' son, only, all right, Menelaus would have got the armor too, except only Phoebus Apollo begrudged him and stirred up Hector, a match for the running war god. Against him, in semblance of a man, the leader of the Cicones, Mentes, and spoke aloud to him and addressed him in winged words. While you, Hector, run after what can never be captured, the horses of valiant Achilles, in other words, Hector, while you're running after the impossible, there are difficult horses. They are difficult horses for mortal men to manage, or even to ride behind them, for all except Achilles, who was born of an immortal mother. Meanwhile, Menelaus, the warlike son of Atreus, stands over Patroclus and has killed the best man of the Trojans, Euphorbus, Pantheus' son, and stopped his furious valor. And so here Mentes is hollering at Hector, saying, don't be a fool and chase after Achilles' horses, who no man can catch and can't control. While you've been doing this, running after nothing, Menelaus killed one of the best of the Trojans, and he's guarding over Patroclus' body, and he's furious. So he spoke, and went back, a god to the mortals' struggle. But bitter sorrow closed over Hector's heart in its darkness. He looked about then across the ranks, and at once was aware of the two men, one stripping the glorious armor, the other sprawled on the ground, and blood running from the gash out of the spear thrust. He stalked through the ranks of the champions, helmed in the bright bronze with a shrill scream, and looking like the flame of Hephaestus, weariless. Nor did Atreus' son fail to hear the sharp cry, so Menelaus heard it. Line 90. Deeply troubled, he spoke to his own great-hearted spirit. Ah me, if I abandon here the magnificent armor, and Patroclus, who has fallen here for the sake of my honor, shall not some one of the Danaans, seeing it, hold it against me? Yet, if I fight, alone as I am, the Trojans and Hector, for shame, shall they not close in, many against one, about me? Hector of the Shining Helm leads all of the Trojans here. Then why does my own heart within me debate this? When a man, in the face of divinity, would fight with another whom some god honors, the big disaster rolls sudden upon him. Therefore, let no Danaan, seeing it, hold it against me. Line 100. So Menelaus says, I hope no Greek will hold it against me. If I give way before Hector, who fights from God, yet if somewhere I could only get some word of Ai, of Aias, of the great war cry, we too might somehow go and keep our spirit of battle even in the face of divinity. If we might win the body for Peleid Achilles, it would be our best among evils. So this is the soliloquy of Menelaus, and he thinks in his heart, he can't run away, he can't be shamed in the face of the Danaans, of the Greeks. If only Aias was here, because the two of them could go and get the body, win the body, even in the face of divinity, they could get the body for Peleid Achilles, because of course Achilles will want this body. And we use this phrase all the time. We say it's the best choice among many evils. It would be our best among evils. Line 105. Now as he was pondering this in his heart and his spirit, meanwhile the ranks of the Trojans came on, and Hector led them, and Menelaus backed away from them and left the dead man, but kept turning on his way like some great bearded lion. All right, Menelaus is backing off, but he's facing the Trojans. Like some great bearded lion, when dogs and men drive him off from a steading with weapons and shouts, and in the breast of the lion the strong heart of valor freezes, and he goes reluctant away from the fenced ground. So fair-haired Menelaus moved from Patroclus, this is the body of Patroclus, but turning stood fast when he had got back to the swarm of his own companions, and looked all about for huge Aias, the son of Telamon, 115, and soon saw where he was, at the left of the entire battle, encouraging his companions and urging them into the fighting, since Phoebus Apollo had smitten them all with unearthly terror. He went on the run, and presently stood beside him and spoke to him. So this is Menelaus to Aias, line 120. "This way, Aias, we must make for fallen Patroclus to try if we can carry back to Achilles the body which is naked. Hector of the Shining Helm has taken his armor." So he spoke, and stirred the spirit in valiant Aias, who strode among the champions, fair-haired Menelaus with him. But Hector, when he had stripped from Patroclus the glorious armor, dragged at him, meaning to cut his head from his shoulders with the sharp bronze, to haul off the body and give it to the dogs of Troy. But meanwhile Aias came near him, carrying like a wall his shield. And Hector drew back to the company of his own companions, and sprang to his chariot, but handed over the beautiful armor to the Trojans, to take back to the city, and to be his great glory, his mega kleos. So Hector got the army. Now Aias, covering the son of Menoetius, this is Patroclus, under his broad shield, stood fast, like a lion over his young, when the young lion is leading his little ones along, and men who are hunting come upon them in the forest. He stands in the pride of his great strength, hooding his eyes under the cover of down-drawn eyelids. Such was Aias as he bestrode the hero Patroclus's body, while on the other side Atreus's son, warlike Menelaus, stood fast, feeding still bigger the great sorrow within him. But Glaucus, line 140, lord of the Lycian men, the son of Hippolochus, looked at Hector scowling and laid a harsh word upon him. "Hector, splendid to look at, you come far short in your fighting. That fame of yours, high as it is, belongs to a runner. Take thought now how to hold fast your town, your citadel by yourself, with those your people who were born in Ilion, in Troy, since no Lycian will go forth now to fight with the Danans for the sake of your city, since after all we got no gratitude for our everlasting hard struggle against your enemies. How then, O hard-hearted, shall you save a worse man in all your company, when you've abandoned Sarpedon, your guest friend, and own companion, to be the spoil and prey of the Argives, who was of so much use to you, yourself, and your city while they lived?" Now, this is interesting, because Glaucus is telling Hector, you didn't protect the body of Sarpedon. You abandoned him. He was dead, but you abandoned him, and he was your guest friend. They had exchanged the Aeneid together, and he was his companion. And Glaucus says, if you do not protect the body and gain the body of this famous Trojan, you missed it, of this famous Trojan Sarpedon, no other Trojan will fight for you, because they'll think you'll do the same for them. You will abandon their body. Therefore now, line 154, 153, now you have not the spirit to keep the dogs from him. Therefore now, if any of the Lycian men will obey me, we are going home, and the headlong destruction of Troy shall be manifest. For if the Trojans had any fighting strength that were daring and unshaken, such as comes on men who, for the sake of their country, have made the hard, hateful work come between them and their enemies, we could quickly get the body of Patroclus inside Ilion. If, dead man though he be, he could be brought into the great city of Lord Priam, if we could tear him out of the fighting, the Argives must at once give up the beautiful armor of Sarpedon, and we could carry his body inside Ilion. All right, what are they thinking here? They could exchange the bodies. They could make, if they could get the body of Patroclus, Achilles' friend Patroclus, inside Troy, even though he's dead, if they could bring him into the great city of Lord Priam, if they could tear him out of the fighting, then the Greeks would at once give up the beautiful armor of Sarpedon, and they could carry his body back to Troy. And so this Trojan is saying, if we could get the Greek Patroclus's body, then we could trade it for the body of Sarpedon. Line 164. Such is the man whose henchman is killed. He is far the greatest of the Argives by the ships, and his men fight hard at close quarters. No, but you could not bring yourself to stand up against Aias of the great heart, nor to look at his eyes in the clamor of fighting men, nor attack him direct, since he is far better than you are. Looking darkly at him, tall Hector of the Shining Helm answered, in line 170, Glaucus, why did a man like you speak this word of annoyance? I am surprised. I thought that for wits you surpassed all others of those who dwell in Lycia, where the soil is generous. And yet now I utterly despise your heart for the thing you have spoken, when you said I cannot stand in the face of gigantic Aias. I am not one who shudders at attack and the thunder of horses, but always the mind of Zeus is a stronger thing than a man's mind. He terrifies even the warlike man. He takes away victory lightly when he himself has driven a man into battle. We've heard this several times, line 178, that Zeus himself will drive a man into battle, promising him victory, then get in there and take it away from him. Come here, friend, and watch me at work. Learn, standing beside me, whether I shall be a coward all day, as you proclaim me, line 180, or whether I stop some Danaan, a Greek, for all of his fury, from his fighting strength, and from the defense of fallen Patroclus. So speaking, he called afar in a great voice to the Trojans. Trojans, Lycians, Dardanians, who fight at close quarters, be men now, dear friends. Remember your furious valor while I am putting on the beautiful armor of blameless Achilles, which I stripped from Patroclus the strong when I killed him. And so what is Hector doing before he goes out to battle? He has stripped the armor from Patroclus, and who did the armor belong to? Of course it belonged to Achilles, and he's now putting the armor on. So spoke Hector of the shining helm, and departed from the hateful battle, and running caught up with his companions very soon, since he was on quick feet, and they had not gone far, carrying the glorious armor of Peleus's son toward the city. He stood apart from the sorrowful fighting, and changed his armor, and gave what he had worn to the fighting Trojans to carry to sacred Ilion, and himself put on that armor immortal of Peleid Achilles. Now, putting this armor on, when Hector puts this armor on, what happened to Dolon, the spy that thought he could have Achilles' chariot and horses? What might happen to Hector that he would dare to wear the armor of a demigod? Putting the armor on is almost like a predilection of death. And remember, this armor was a gift to Peleus at his wedding. And that is why it's the Pelian Achilles and it's the Pelian armor. 195. And he himself put on that armor immortal of Peleid Achilles, which, and now we're going to get the pedigree of the armor, which the Uranian gods had given to his loved father, and he, in turn, grown old, had given it to his son, but a son who never grew old in his father's armor. When Zeus, who gathers the clouds, saw him, apart from the others, arming himself in the battle gear of godlike Peleides, Achilles, he stirred his head and spoke to his own spirit. Line 200. Ah, poor wretch! There is no thought of death in your mind now, and yet death stands close beside you as you put on the immortal armor of a surpassing man. There are others who tremble before him. Now you've killed this man's dear friend, who was strong and gentle, and taken the armor, as you should not have done, from his shoulders and head. Still, for the present, I will invest you with great strength, and make up for it, that you will not come home out of the fighting. And Andromache, take from your hands the glorious arms of Achilles. He spoke, the son of Cronos, and nodded his head with the dark brows. And so what did Zeus just predict? He said, you have killed Achilles, dear friend. You've taken the armor. You shouldn't have done that. Still, I'll give you great strength now to make up for it that you're not going to come home from the fighting. And Andromache, who of course is the wife of Hector, is not going to be able to take from your hands the glorious arms of Achilles. He is not going to get to take the armor of Achilles back inside Troy and give it to Andromache, his wife, and say, look at my mega kleos. He spoke, the son of Cronos, and nodded his head with the dark brows. The armor was fitted to Hector's skin, and Ares, the dangerous war god, entered him, so that the inward body was packed full of force and fighting strength. He went onward, calling in a great voice to his renowned companions in arms, and figured before them, flaming in the battle gear of great-hearted Pelion. He ranged their ranks and spoke a word to encourage each captain. So this is Hector going among the ranks of the Trojans, encouraging each captain, and he's wearing his armor of Achilles. Encourage each captain to Mesthles and Glaucus, to Thurlacus and Medon, Decenor and Hippothous and Asterpeus and Porces and Chromius and the bird interpreter, Enomus, and stirring all of these forward, called to them in winged words. Line 220. Hear me, you numberless horde of companions who live at our borders. It was not for any desire nor need of a multitude that man by man I gathered you to come here from your cities, but so that you might have good will to defend the innocent children of the Trojans and their wives from the fighting Achaeans. Line 225. With such a purpose I wear out my own people for presents and food, wherewith I make strong the spirit within each one of you. Therefore a man must now turn his face straight forward and perish or survive. This is the sweet invitation of battle. That man of you who drags Patroclus, dead as he is, back among the Trojans, breakers of horses, and Aias gives way before him, okay, if the one of you that can do that, I will give him half the spoils for his portion, and keep half for myself, and his glory, his kleos, shall be as great as mine is. So he spoke, and they lifted their spears and went straight for the Danaans, who fell to their weight, and inside each man the spirit was hopeful to get the body away from Telamonian Aias. Fools, since over the dead man he tore the life out of many. Then Aias himself spoke to Menelaus of the great war cry. Illustrious Menelaus, dear friend, I no longer have hope that even you and I can win back out of the fighting. My fear is not so much for the dead body of Patroclus, who presently must glut the dogs and the birds of Troy, so much as I fear for my own head, my life, and what may befall it, and for yours, since this cloud of war is darkened on all things, this Hector, while for you and me sheer death is emerging. Line 245. Come then, call the great men of the Danaans, if each might hear you. He spoke, and Menelaus of the great war cry obeyed him. He lifted his voice and called in a piercing cry to the Danaans. Friends, O leaders and men of counsel among the Argives, the Greeks, you that beside Agamemnon and Menelaus, the two sons of Atreus, drink the community's wine and give each man his orders to the people, and from Zeus the respect and honor attend you, it is hard for me to discriminate among you each man who is a leader. So big is the bitter fight that has blazed up. Then let a man come of his own accord. Think it shameful that Patroclus be given to the dogs of Troy to delight them. Line 255. He spoke, and swift Aias, son of Oileus, was sharp to hear him. Now this is the smaller Aias, was sharp to hear him, and was first to come running along the battle and join him, and after him Idomeneus and Idomeneus's companion Meriones, a match for the murderer lord of battles. But what man could tell forth from his heart the names of the others, all who after these waked the war strength of the Achaeans? The Trojans came down on them in a pack, and Hector led them. As, what was it like with Hector leading his pack? As when the outpouring place of a rain-glutted river, the huge surf of the sea roars against the current, out-jutting beaches thunder aloud to the backwash of the salt water, with such a bellow the Trojans came on. But now the Achaeans, who stood fast about the son of Menoetius, the body of Patroclus, in a single courage, and fenced but beneath their bronze-armored shields, while the son of Cronus drifted across the glitter of their helmets, a deepening mist, since before this time he had not hated Menoetius's son, while he lived yet and was Achilles' companion, and loathed now that he could become the spoil of the hated Trojans' dogs, and stirred his companions on to defend him. First, the Trojans shouldered back the glancing-eyed Achaeans, who abandoned the body and ran for terror. Nor did the high-hearted Trojans take any with their spears for all of their striving, but dragged at the dead man, only the Achaeans were not long destined to fail him, since they were pulled around in sudden speed by Aias, who for his beauty and the work of his hands surpassed all other Danaans after the blameless son of Peleus. And so Aias here, Telamonian Aias is next to the blameless son of Peleus. He is next to Achilles in strength. So the Greeks ran away, but they weren't long destined because Aias got them to turn around and come back. Line 281. He steered through the front fighters in pride of strength like a savage wild boar who among the mountains easily scatters the dogs and strong young men when he turns at bay in the valley. So now the son of haughty Telamon, glorious Aias, turned to charge and easily scatter the Trojan battalions, who had taken their stand bestriding Patroclus in high hope of dragging him off to their own city, and so winning honor. Indeed, Hippothous, glorious son of Pelasgian Lethus, was trying to drag him by the foot through the strong encounter by fastening the sling of his shield around the ankle tendons for the favor of Hector and the Trojans, but the sudden evil came to him, and none for all their desire could defend him. The son of Telamon, sweeping in through the mass of the fighters, struck him at close quarters through the brazen cheeks of his helmet, and the helm, crested with horsehair, this is a horsehair-crested helmet, was riven about the spearhead to the impact of the huge spear, and the weight of the hand behind it, and the brain ran from the wound along the spear by the eye-hole, bleeding. There his strength was washed away, and from his hands he let fall to the ground the foot of great-hearted Patroclus to lie there, and himself collapsed prone over the dead man far away from generous Lyrsa, and he could not render again the care of his dear parents. He was short-lived, beaten down beneath the spear of high-hearted Aias. Again Hector threw at Aias with the shining javelin, but Aias, with his eyes straight on him, avoided the bronze spear by a little, and Hector struck Schedius, the son of high-hearted Iphitus, and by far the best of the Phoicians, one who lived in his home in famous Panopeus, and was lord over many people. He struck him fair beneath the collarbone, and the pointed bronze head tore clean through and came out by the base of the shoulder. He fell thunderously, and his armor clattered upon him. Line 312. But Aias in turn cut at Phorcys, the wise son of Phaenops, in the middle of the belly as he stood over fallen Hippothous, and broke the hollow of the corslet, so that the entrails, these are his guts, spurted from the bronze, and he went down, clawing the dust in his fingers. The champions of Troy gave back then, and glorious Hector and the Argives gave a great cry, and dragged back the bodies of Hippothous and Phorcys, and eased the armor from their shoulders. Then once more might the Trojans have climbed back into Ilion's wall, subdued by terror before the warlike Achaeans, and the Argives, even beyond Zeus's destiny, might have won glory by their own force and strength. Okay, so the Argives, who might have won? The Greeks might have even won glory by their own strength, without help from the gods, had not Apollo in person stirred on Aeneas. And yes, this was Virgil's Aeneas. The Romans will pick up on this in another 800 years. He had assumed the form of the herald Peripus, Epitus's son, growing old in his herald's office by Aeneas's aged father, and a man whose thoughts were of kindness. In the likeness of this man, Zeus's son Apollo spoke to him, "Aeneas, how could you be the men to defend sheer Ilion even against a god's will? As I have seen other men do it in the confidence of their own force and strength, their own manhood and their own numbers, though they had too few people for it. But now Zeus wishes the victory far rather for our side than the Danans. Only keep yourselves blenching, and will not fight them." So he spoke, but Aeneas knew far-striking Apollo as he looked him straight in the face, and called in a great voice to Hector, line 335, "Hector, and you other lords of the Trojans and their companions, here is a shameful thing. We are climbing back into Ilion's wall, subdued by terror before the warlike Achaeans. Yet see, some one of the gods is standing beside me and tells me that Zeus the Supreme Counselor lends his weight to our fighting. Therefore we must go straight for the Danans, the Greeks, so that they may not carry thus easily back to their ships the fallen Patroclus." He spoke, and with a long leap stood far before the front fighters, and the Trojans turned and held their ground against the Achaeans. And now Aeneas killed Leocritus with a spear thrust, the son of Arisbas, the noble companion of Lycomedes. But as he fell, the warrior Lycomedes pitied him, and stood close in, and made a cast with the shining javelin, and struck Apisaon, son of Hippasus, shepherd of the people, in the liver under the midriff, and the strength of his knees was broken. He was one who had come from Paeonia, of the rich soil, and was best of her men in fighting, next to Asteropaeus. As this man fell, warlike Asteropaeus, pitying him, and he in turn drove forward, eager to fight with the Danans, but was not able to do it, for they, standing about Patroclus, and this is the body, fenced him behind their shields on all sides, and their spears out thrust. For Aias ranged their whole extent with his numerous orders, and would not let any man give back from the body, nor let one get out and fight by himself far in front of the other Achaeans, but made them stand hard and fast about him, and fight at close quarters. Line 360. And so the men here are protecting Patroclus in somewhat of a circle with their backs toward the middle and facing out with their spears. The ground ran with red blood. The dead men dropped one after another from the ranks alike of Trojans and their mighty companions and Danaans also, since these fought not without bloodletting, but far fewer of them went down, since they ever remembered always to stand massed and beat sudden death from each other. So they fought on in the likeness of fire. Nor would you have thought the sun was still secure in his place in the sky, nor the moon, since the mist was closed over all that part of the fight where the bravest stood about Patroclus, the fallen son of Menoetius. Now elsewhere the rest of the Trojans and strong-grieved Achaeans fought naturally in the bright air, with the sun's sharp glitter everywhere about them. No cloud was showing anywhere on earth nor on the mountains. They fought their battle by intervals, standing each well off at a distance, avoiding the painful shots from the other side. But they in the middle were suffering distress in the midst of the fighting, and the cruel bronze wearing them. These men were the bravest, but there were two men of glory, Thrasymedes and Antilochus, who had not yet heard how Patroclus the Blameless had been killed, but still thought he was alive and fighting in the first shock with the Trojans. But these two, watching against death or flight in their company, fought their separate battle, since such was their order from Nestor, as he was urging them forth from the black ships into the fighting. So for these, day long, the hard bitterness of the weary battle rose, with the ever-relentless sweat and the weariness knees, legs, and feet that supported from underneath each fighter, their hands and all eyes also were running wet as they fought on over the brave henchmen of the swift-footed Aeacides, Achilles. And what was it like? As when a man gives the hide of a great ox, a bullock, drenched first deep in fat, to all his people to stretch out, the people take it from him and stand in a circle about it and pull, and presently the moisture goes and the fat sinks in with so many pulling, and the bull's hide is stretched out level, so the men of both sides in a cramped space tugged at the body in both directions, and the hearts of the Trojans were hopeful to drag him away to Ilion, those of the Achaeans to get him back to the hollow ships. That's what it's like as they do a tug-of-war on the body of Patroclus. And about him a savage struggle rose. Not Ares, who rallies men, not Athena, watching this fight, could have scorned it, not even in some strong anger. Such was the wicked work of battle for men and for horses. Zeus strained tight above Patroclus that day. But the brilliant Achilles did not yet know at all that Patroclus had fallen. Since now the men were fighting far away from the fast ships under the Trojan wall, and Achilles had no expectation that Patroclus was dead, but thought he was alive and close under the gates and would come back. He had not thought that Patroclus would storm the city without himself, nor with himself either, for often he had word from his mother, not known to mortals. She was ever telling him what was the will of great Zeus, but this time his mother did not tell Achilles of all the evil that had been done, nor how his dearest companion had perished. So they about the body, gripping their headed spears, kept inexorably close together, and slaughtered on both sides. And such would be the saying of some bronze-armored Achaean, "Friends," line 415, "there is no glory for us if we go back again to our hollow ships, but here and now let the black earth open gaping for all. This would soon be far better for us if we give up this man to the Trojans, breaker of horses, to take away to their own city and win glory from him." And such in turn would be the cry of some high-hearted Trojan. So first some Greek would say, "We can't even go home if we don't get the body back to the ships." Then, line 420, some high-hearted Trojan would cry out, "O friends, though it be destined for all of us to be killed here over this man, still none of us must give ground from the fighting." Thus a man would speak and stir the spirit in each one of his fellowship. So they fought on, and the iron tumult went up into the brazen sky through the barren, bright air. But the horses of Aeacides, standing apart from the battle, wept. And of course Aeacides is Achilles. And so here Achilles' horses are weeping, as they had done since they heard how their charioteer had fallen in the dust at the hands of murderous Hector. In truth, Automedon, the powerful son of Diores, hit them over and over again with the stroke of the flying lash, or talked to them, sometimes entreating them, sometimes threatening. They were unwilling to go back to the wide passage of Hela and the ships, or go back into the fighting after the Achaeans, but still And then we'll read this simile, how do they stand still? These are Achilles' horses. They're refusing to move. These horses have gone into their own type of mourning. They're standing there as stands a grave monument, which is set over the mounded tomb of a dead man or lady. They stood there, holding motionless in its place the far-wrought chariot, leaning their heads along the ground, and warm tears were running earthward from underneath the lids of the mourning horses, who longed for their charioteer, while their bright manes were made dirty as they streamed down either side of the yoke from under the yoke pad. So these horses have gone into mourning. Line 441. As he watched the mourning horses, the son of Cronos pitied them, and stirred his head and spoke to his own spirit. And so Zeus now is just speaking to himself, but speaking aloud. Poor wretches! Why then did we ever give you over to the Lord Peleus, a mortal man, and you yourselves are immortal and ageless, only so that among unhappy men you also might be grieved? And here we find out Zeus is regretting. Why would he ever have given immortal horses to the Lord Peleus? Because, of course, they're doomed to have their masters die and then they'll grieve. Line 446. And this is Zeus speaking. Since among all creatures that breathe on earth and crawl on it, there is not anywhere a thing more dismal than man is. We find out in Book 23, lines 277 to 78, Poseidon is the one who gave the horses to Pelion. Continuing, line 448. At least the son of Priam, Hector, shall not mount behind you in the carefully wrought chariot. I will not let him. Is it not enough for him that he has the armor and glories in wearing it? But now I will put vigor into your knees and your spirits so that you bring back Automedon out of the fighting safe to the hollow ships, since I shall still give the Trojans the glory of killing until they win to the strong-benched vessels. Then, until the sun goes down and the blessed darkness comes over. So he spoke, Zeus, and breathed great vigor into the horses, and they, shaking the dust from their manes to the ground lightly, carried the running chariot among the Achaeans and the Trojans. Automedon fought from them, though grieving for his companion. He would dash in like a vulture among geese with his horses, and lightly get out of the way of the Trojans' confusion, and lightly charge in again in pursuit of a great multitude, and yet could kill no men when he swept in chase of them. He had no way, while he was alone in a separate chariot, to lunge with the spear, and still keep in hand his fast-running horses. This style of battle that Homer describes, ending with 465 here, is a chariot battle, but it requires two people in the chariot. One drives, one fights. But at last there was one of his companions who laid eyes on him. Alcimedon, the son of Laerces, descended from Haemon. He stood behind the chariot and called to Automedon. Automedon, what god put this unprofitable purpose into your heart, and has taken away the better wits, so that you're trying to fight the Trojans in the first shock of encounter by yourself, since your companion has been killed, and Hector glories in wearing Aeacides, Achilles' armor on his own shoulders? In turn, Automedon answered him, the son of Diores, Alcimedon, which other of the Achaeans could handle the management and the strength of immortal horses as you can, were it not Patroclus, the equal of the immortals in council while he lived? Now death and fate have closed in upon him. Therefore, take over from me the whip and the glittering guide reins, while I dismount from behind the horses, so I may do battle. Line 480. And here we have mention of something very interesting. Apparently in Homer's day, which would be about 800 BC. Remember, the battle is about 1200 BC. But in Homer's day, Homer believes, as he tells this story, that the way you fight battle from a chariot is to have two men in it. One is a driver, one is a fighter. The chariot stops. You get off the chariot, you go and you do battle, and then you jump back on the chariot and leave. He spoke, and Alcimedon vaulted up to the charging chariot and quickly gathered up the reins and the lash in his hands, while Automedon sprang down. But glorious Hector saw them and immediately spoke to Aeneas, who stood close beside him. Aeneas, lord of the councils of the bronze-armored Trojans, line 485, I see before us the horses of swift-footed Achilles, who appear now in the fighting with weak charioteers. Therefore I could be hopeful of their capture if you were willing in heart to go with me. If we too went forth against them, they would not dare to stand their ground and do battle against us. So Hector now is wearing the armor of Achilles, line 490. What does he want now? He wants the horses and the chariot. He spoke, and the strong son of Anchises did not disobey him. That's Aeneas. The two went strongly forward, hooding their shoulders in well-tanned and stubborn hides of oxen, with deep bronze beaten upon them. Along with these went Chromius, the godlike, Aretus, both together, and the spirit within each had high hopes of killing the men and driving away the strong-necked horses. Poor fools, who were not going to come back from Automedon without the shedding of blood. And he, with a prayer to Zeus, father, was filled about the darkening heart with war strength and courage, and spoke now to Alcimedon, his trusted companion, line 500. Alcimedon, no longer check the horses back from me, but keep them breeding right against my back. I have no thought that I can stand up to the strength of Hector, the son of Priam. Sooner, I think, he will kill us and mount behind the main floating horses of Achilles and scatter the ranks of the Argive fighting men, or else himself go down in the first rush. He spoke and called to the two Iontes and Menelaus. Iontes, lord of the Argives, and Menelaus, we call you to leave the dead man in the care of those who are fittest to stand bestriding him and fend off the ranks of the Trojans, while you beat back the day without pity from us who are living. For Hector and Aeneas, the greatest men of the Trojans, are leaning the weight of their charge this way through the sorrowful battle. Eh? Hector and Aeneas are coming. Yet all these are things that are lying upon the gods' knees. Line 515. I myself will cast, and Zeus will look after the issue. So he spoke, and balanced the spear far-shadowed, and threw it, and struck the shield of Aretus on its perfect circle, nor could the shield hold off the spear, but the bronze smashed clean through, and was driven on through the belt to the deep of the belly. 520. What was it like? As when a strong grown man with a sharp axe in his hands chops at an ox, ranger of the fields, behind the horns, cutting all the way through the sinew, and the ox, springing forward, topples. So Aretus sprang forward, then toppled back, and sharp driven into the depth of his belly the quivering spear unstrung him. Then Hector made a cast with the shining spear at Automedon, but he, keeping his eyes straight on him, avoided the bronze spear, for he bent forward, and behind his back the long spear shaft was driven into the ground so that the butt end was shaken on the spear. Then and there Ares the Huge took the force from it, and now they would have gone for each other with swords at close quarters had not the two Iontes driven strongly between them, who came on through the battle at the call of their companion, and in fear before them Hector and Aeneas the godlike, Chromius, gave ground back and away once more, leaving Aretus lying there where he was with a wound in his vitals. Then Automedon, a match for the running god of battles, stripped the armor and spoke a word of boasting above him. Now I've put a little sorrow from my heart for Patroclus's death, although the man I killed was not great as he was. So he spoke, and took up the bloody war spoils, and laid them inside the chariot, and himself mounted it, the blood running from hands and feet, as on some lion who's eaten a bullock. Once again over Patroclus's body was close drawn a strong battle, weary and sorrowful, and Athena from the sky descending waked the bitter fighting, since Zeus of the wide brows sent her down to stir the Danaans, for now his purpose had shifted. As when in the sky Zeus strings for mortals the shimmering rainbow to be a portent and sign of war, or of wintry storm when heat perishes, such storm as stops mortals' works upon the face of the earth and afflicts their cattle, so Athena, shrouded in the shimmering cloud about her, merged among the swarming Achaeans, and wakened each man. So Athena comes down, apparently, in a rainbow here. You can look at book 4, line 7-5, and at that time it was she was a falling star. Now she is coming in, shrouded in a shimmering cloud, and she merges among the swarming Achaeans and wakened each man. At first she spoke, stirring him on, to the son of Atreus, strong Menelaus, since he was the one who was standing close to her. She likened herself in form and weariless voice to Phoenix. So Athena makes herself look like Phoenix, looks and voice. Menelaus, this will be a thing of shame, a reproach set of you, if under the wall of the Trojans the dogs in their fury can mutilate the staunch companion of haughty Achilles. But hold strongly on, and stir up all the rest of your people. Then in turn Menelaus of the great war cry answered her, Phoenix, my father, aged and honored, if only Athena would give me such strength and hold the volleying missiles off from me. Of course, who is he speaking to? Athena. So, for my part, I would be willing to stand by Patroclus's body and defend him, since in his death he hurt my heart greatly. Yet Hector holds still the awful strength of a fire, nor falters in raging with the bronze spear, since Zeus is giving him glory. So he spoke, and the goddess, gray-eyed Athena, was happy that first among all the divinities his prayer had bespoken her. Athena's happy that of all the gods there were, that he spoke to her first. She put strength into the man's shoulders and knees, inspiring in his breast the persistent daring of that mosquito, who, though it is driven hard away from a man's skin, even so, for the taste of human blood, persists in biting him. With such daring she darkened to fullness the heart inside him. He stood over Patroclus and made a cast with the shining spear. There was one among the Trojans, Podius, Aethon's son, a rich man and good, whom Hector prized above others in the countryside, since he was his friend and ate at his table. Now fair-haired Menelaus struck this man at the war belt as he swept away in flight and drove the bronze spear clean through it. He fell thunderously, and Atreus' son Menelaus dragged the body away from the Trojans among his companions. But now Apollo came and stood beside Hector and stirred him, assuming the shape of Phaenops, Asius's son, who among all guest friends was dearest to Hector, so they have exchanged guest friendship, and lived at home in Abydos. Line 585. In the likeness of this man, far-striking Apollo spoke to him. So Apollo now is disguised as a man. Hector, what other Achaean now shall be frightened before you? See, you've shrunk back before Menelaus, who in times before this was a soft spear-fighter, and now he's gone, taking off single-handed a body from among the Trojans. He's killed your trusted companion, valiant among the champions, Podes, the son of Aethon. He spoke, and the dark cloud of sorrow closed over Hector. He took his way among the champions, helmed in the shining bronze, and now the son of Cronos caught up the betasseled, glaring Aegis, and shrouded Ida in mists. He let go a lightning flash and a loud thunderstroke, shaking the mountain, gave victory to the Trojans, and terrified the Achaeans. So what has Zeus done? He picked up the Aegis, and he has shrouded Mount Ida in mists, and this, of course, is tasseled. And what happens when you shake the Aegis in front of your enemy? You scare him to death. First to begin the flight, of course, is running away, was Peneleus the Boeotian. For he, turning always toward the attack, was hit in the shoulder's end, a slight wound, but the spear of Polydamas, who had thrown it from a stance very close to him, had grated the bone's edge. Then Hector, wounded in the hand by the wrist, Laetus, the son of great-hearted Electrian, and halted his warcraft, and he drew back staring about him, since his spirit had hope no longer of holding a spear steady in his hand to fight with the Trojans. Now, as Hector made a rush for Laetus, Idomeneus struck him on the corslet over the chest by the nipple, but the long shaft was broken behind the head, and the Trojans shouted. Now Hector made a cast at Deucalion Idomeneus, as he stood in his chariot, and missed him by only a little, but struck the follower and charioteer of Meriones, Coranus, who had come with him from strong-founded Lictus. Now Idomeneus, at the first, had come on foot, leaving the oar-swept ships, and now would have given the Trojans a mighty triumph had not Coranus swiftly come up with the fast-running horses. Line 615. Came as light to the other, and beat from him the day without pity, but himself lost his life at the hands of man-slaughtering Hector, who hit him under the jaw by the ear, and the spear-shaft pushed out his teeth by the roots from the base, and split the tongue through the middle. He toppled from the chariot with the reins on the ground scattered, but Meriones, leaning down, caught these up in his own hands from the surface of the plain, and called aloud to Idomeneus, "Lash them now until you can get back to our fast ships. You see yourself there is no more strength left in the Achaeans." So he spoke, and Idomeneus whipped the main floating horses back to the hollow ships, with fear fallen upon his spirit. Line 226-25. Nor was it unseen by great-hearted Aias how Zeus shifted the strength of the fighting toward the Trojans, nor by Menelaus. First of the two to speak was huge Telamonian Aias. Shame on it! By now even one with a child's innocence could see how Father Zeus himself is helping the Trojans. And so Ajax is saying here, even a child can see that Zeus is helping the Trojans. The weapons of each of these take hold no matter who throws them, good fighter or bad, since Zeus is straightening all of them equally, while ours fall to the ground and are utterly useless. Okay, so Aias says here, every time a Trojan throws a spear, it hits its mark. Every time a Greek does, it falls to the ground, it's useless. Therefore, let us deliberate with ourselves upon the best counsel, how at the same time to rescue the dead body, and also win back ourselves, and bring joy to our beloved companions, who look our way and sorrow for us, and believe no longer that the fury of man slaughtering Hector, his hands irresistible, can be held, but must be driven on to the black ships. But there should be some champion, some companion, who could carry the message quickly to Peleus' son Achilles, since I think he has not yet heard the ghastly news how his beloved companion has fallen. All right, so he says, somebody needs to go tell Achilles that his best friend Patroclus is dead. Yet I cannot make out such a man among the Achaeans, since they are held in the mist alike, the men and their horses. Father Zeus, draw free from the mist the sons of the Achaeans, make bright the air, and give sight back to our eyes in shining daylight, destroy us, if to destroy us be now your pleasure. He spoke thus, and as he wept, the father took pity on him, and forthwith scattered the mist and pushed the darkness back from them, and the sun blazed out, and all the battle was plain before them. Now Aias spoke to him of the great war cry, Menelaus. Look hard, illustrious Menelaus, if you can discover Antilochus still living, the son of great-hearted Nestor, and send him out to run with a message to wise Achilles, how one who was far the dearest of his companions has fallen. And so Aias tells Menelaus, let's send Nestor's son to tell Achilles. He spoke, and Menelaus of the great war cry obeyed him, line 656, and went on his way, and what was it like? As from amid fenced ground some lion who's been harrying dogs and men, but his strength is worn out, they will not let him tear out the fat of the oxen, watching night long against him, and he in his hunger for meat closes in but can get nothing of what he wants, for the raining javelins thrown from the daring hands of the meat beat ever against him, and the flaming torches, and these he balks at for all of his fury, and with the daylight goes away, disappointed of desire. So Menelaus of the great war cry went from Patroclus's much unwilling, and was afraid for him, lest the Achaeans, under pressure of fear, might leave him a spoil for the enemy. And so what was it like as Menelaus was trying to protect this body and was torn away from it, just like when this happens to a lion? Lest the Achaeans, under pressure of fear, might leave him a spoil for the enemy, and had much to urge on Meriones and the Iontes, the Ajax and Ajax. Iontes, O Lord of the Argives, and you, Meriones, line 670, now let each one of you remember unhappy Patroclus, who was gentle, and understood how to be kindly toward all men while he lived. Now death and fate have closed in upon him. So spoke fair-haired Menelaus, and went away from them, peering about on all sides like an eagle, who, as men say, sees most sharply of all winged creatures under the heaven, and lofty though he hover the cowering hare, the swift-footed escapes not his sight as he crouches in the shaggy bush, but the eagle plunges suddenly to grab him and tear the life from him. So now in you, Menelaus illustrious, the eyes shining circled everywhere your swarming hordes of companions, if the man might see anywhere Nestor's son still living, and saw soon where he was, at the left of the entire battle, encouraging his companions and urging them into the fighting. Menelaus, the fair-haired, stood beside him and spoke to him. So this is Menelaus speaking to the son of Nestor to tell him it's his job to go tell Achilles that Patroclus is dead. Line 685. Antilochus, turn this way, illustrious, and hear from me the ghastly message of a thing I wish never had happened. You can see for yourself, I think, already from watching, how the god is wheeling disaster against the Danians, against us, and how the Trojans are winning. The best of the Achaeans has fallen. Patroclus. And a huge loss is inflicted upon the Danans. Run then quickly to tell Achilles, by the ships of the Achaeans, and tell him. He might in speed win back to his ship the dead body which is naked. Hector of the shining helm has taken his armor. So he spoke, and Antilochus hated his word as he listened. He stayed for a long time without a word, speechless, and his eyes filled with tears, the springing voice which held still within him. Yet even so he neglected not Menelaus's order, but went on the run, handing his war gear to a blameless companion, Laodicus, who had turned nearby his single-footed horses. Now, as his feet carried him, weeping, out of the battle, with his message of evil for the son of Peleus Achilles, so now, Menelaus, the spirit in you, illustrious, wished not to defend his stricken companions after Antilochus was gone from them, and his loss wrought greatly upon the Pylians. Rather, he threatened Thrasymedes the Brilliant over to help them, while he himself went back again to the hero Patroclus running, and took his place beside the Iontes, and spoke to them, "Now I have sent the man you spoke of back to the fast ships on his way to swift-footed Achilles. Yet think not even he can come now, for all his great anger with Hector the Brilliant. There is no way he could fight bare of armor against the Trojans." And so what did Menelaus say? He tells Aias, Achilles can't even help us now. He has no armor, even for all his great anger with Hector. Why does Achilles not have any armor? He loaned it to Patroclus. Patroclus was killed. Who stripped the armor from Patroclus? Hector. Who's wearing the armor? Hector. We by ourselves must deliberate upon the best counsel, how at the same time to rescue the dead body, and also ourselves escape death and destiny from the clamoring Trojans. Then in turn, huge Telamonian Aias answered him, All you have said, renowned Menelaus, is fair and orderly. But come, you and Meriones, stoop and shoulder the body at once, and carry it out of the hard fighting. Behind you we too shall fight off the Trojans and glorious Hector, we who have the same name, the same spirit, and who in times past have stood fast beside each other in the face of the bitter war god. Who are these men that share the same name? Aias and Aias. He spoke, and they caught the body from the ground in their arms, lifting from him high with a great heave, and the Trojan people behind them shouted aloud as they saw the Achaeans lifting the dead man, and made a rush against them like dogs, who swept in rapidly on a wounded wild boar ahead of the young men who hunt him, and for the moment race in raging to tear him to pieces until the confidence of his strength, he turns on them at bay, and they give ground and scatter for fear one way and another. So the Trojans, until that time, kept always in close chase assembled, stabbing at them with swords and leaf-headed spears. But every time the two Iontes would swing round to face them and stand fast, the color of their skin changed, and no longer could any endure to sweep in further and fight for the body. So what do you think the color of their skin changed to? Line 733, of course, from healthy normal skin to white. Their faces turned white when they saw the two Iontes. Line 735, So these straining carried the dead man out of the battle and back